Hello, welcome to this week's episode, this month's, this year's episode of the FitCast, something like that, 226. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and we got everyone here. We got Dr. Jonathan Fass from the Sandstorm out in Saudi Arabia. How's
not recently, but yeah.
Yeah?
That does happen. Yeah, man. It's crazy.
Have you found
are those things as freaky looking as they look, the ones that I've seen documented? Because they look freaky. Like, I think if I saw that, I would think the end of the world was coming. Like,
generally
some
speaking,
really scary looking storms.
Like, you know how, like, you drive in the mountains and you drive through a cloud?
Yeah.
Now imagine that cloud was friggin' dirt in the middle of a hurricane.
Moving at an extremely fast pace. Yeah, I gotcha.
Yeah, it's not fun at all. It's amazing.
And that's also Lee Peel from LeePeel.com and all around internet superstar. What's up, Lee? When's that album dropping? Is that dropping on the 13th? That fresh cut?
You got that on the 1st of November. You know what I'm saying?
That's an EP, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, damn. It's got like 10 tracks on that.
Yeah. Featuring Ja Rule.
Featuring Ja Rule. Oh, man. Ja Rule's back.
From jail.
Too fast. All right.
He's in jail? Is that where he went?
Dude,
he was. I don't know.
He's in jail. DMX is in jail.
I think I knew DMX is in jail.
Dude, DMX, gotta let him out. I need some fresh beats. Take off the lyrics, but I'll listen to the beats. So we got a great show lined up for you this week. We got a ton of topics and things to discuss from the audience. First thing, let's go through some stuff that's been going on. Obviously, we haven't had a podcast in like 2 months, and we haven't had a like an OG version of the show in like 3 months. So it has been a while. We took a little bit of break. I took a little bit of a break. I've had a lot of stuff to work on the side, and we've always kind of done this as like a bonus to the stuff that we do in the industry. So I apologize that we haven't gotten one up sooner, and I know I've literally gotten dozens of emails, like people like, where's the podcast? Did I miss it? I'm in withdrawal, and that's great. Thank you for all that support. That's really cool that you guys sent that stuff in. But we are back, and batteries are refueled. I've kind of lost my voice a little bit, but hopefully it won't go out during the show. So again, I just want to say thank you for your support and for continuing to look for the show. We are hoping to be back on a regular basis. I've even sent out emails trying to do interviews for this week. But more or less, I've been going back full time at Mike Boyle Strength and Conditioning with coaching and personal training, and that on top of the other stuff that I've been working on, like some new stuff that Mike's going to have coming out pretty soon. Things got a little nutso, but that's donezo, as Tom Halford would say on Parks and Recreation. So here we go. We're back. I just want to quickly run through a couple things. Shout out to Ali McKee and Nagar, who came up this past weekend to Mike Boyle Strength and Conditioning, hung out with us there, and we all went out on Friday night to Fire and Ice. And
great restaurant.
Yeah, oh, it's unbelievable, and it's like it's made for people in our industry or who want to eat meat and vegetables, because that's, you can get straight up meat and vegetables, go up as many times as you want, and get that. And now again, I just want to say thanks to them for coming up. Two awesome people, great to hang out with, and looks like they're going to be coming up for the winter seminar, so I'm sure we will have some more antics and stuff to talk about.
And I got reports.
What's up?
I got reports that there was anti-rotation dances.
Oh, holy crap. How'd you hear about this?
Wow.
See, I know.
Oh, you talked to Roger?
I know what's up. I got info. I got spies.
Roger, I don't drink much, but
And I asked him if you in response, if like some of the women did like hip thrust to like kettlebell swing moves or something, and that you were all creating this very dorky exercise dance ritual going on.
No, I've gone into a I definitely feel like I get something out of having, you know, a couple beers, drink responsibly, couple beers when I have to go out. I have to, you know, I can't be working all weekend, every weekend, because then that makes a dull Kevin. So, you work hard, you train hard, and you take care of your stuff. And, you know, three beers on a Friday night over the course of like 5 hours, you know, it just allows you to kind of have some fun and join in on the festivities. So, and to be honest, that's like most like fitness seminars. You go to like fitness seminars and you hang out. It's like chance to relax a little bit. So, but yeah, no, Roger and I, there was an 80s cover band playing, and, somehow Roger and I were doing like one, like one fisted anti-rotation, like fights. Like we would go like right fist against right fist standing across from each other.
Wow.
And, we were pushing as hard as we can, like just like, you know, standard split stance, a little bit wider than hip width apart, toes pointed straight ahead, you know, the way that we do a proper anti-rotation press. And I was winning that shit. Roger's looking pretty good, but
is this Boston's answer to the fist pump?
No, I wish we had pictures of this, because like the group that we're with, we were with, you know, a bunch of the NBSC staff, like it's going nuts. It was causing quite a, uproar.
See, for me, that's the kind of thing where I react like the other antelopes in the herd, when the tiger comes and kills one of them and the rest of them just sort of start looking away, but they don't quite run away because there's still good food wherever they were, so they just sort of look away. Like,
no, it's fine. You got like a good pump going, because I have my and I was sporting my Back to the Future t-shirt, and to be honest, panties weren't dropping as much as I would have expected them to be. I thought that was just like an automatic, like there was some kind of like it demagnetized panties or something like that, so they just dropped to the floor. But
the shirt or the anti-rotation dance or both?
Which were you? The combination of both was like a nuclear bomb. It was nuts. It was but no, I literally had, you know, people come up to me and say that was an awesome t-shirt. One was a guy that we were with, Rick, who was his birthday, and one was Al, who said, I think Back to the Future is awesome. And I'm like, you're right, Back to the Future is awesome. It's the greatest movie ever. And, oh man, if you think about it, if Justin Lin did a Back to the Future movie, but that's off topic. We're going to,
we're going to keep it moving.
But shout out to them. Also, another cool thing, probably should have brought up an off topic, but I'm going to Tokyo in 4 weeks, believe it or not. For a week. I finally made it happen. So,
for a drift?
Yeah, no, I'm going to be looking for Han. I know where his place is. I went Google Maps, I looked around, I found it. Even though the actor is really Korean, I'm really pumped. I'm actually going to be checking out some gyms in Tokyo. So hopefully I will be able to shoot some pictures and give you guys a little bit of a report of what that is. But it's going to be like a week vacation, just like walking around Shinjuku and, you know, going around Japan, kind of doing some sightseeing, doing some shopping, just hanging out, sitting around. So it should be pretty good. We'll have some more news on that soon. If you have any tips on how to survive a 17-hour flight, let me know. Meeting of the Minds is coming up in Arizona in just under...
I love how he asked that when I'm sitting right here.
Right there.
What did I ask?
Right there.
What are you talking about?
Tips for like long trips on flights.
I know. We'll talk about it next week. We'll just keep it moving. Meeting of the Minds is next week in Arizona. It's Perform Better. They basically bring all the presenters into one, super seminar where the theme this year is the future of fitness. So everyone's going to be talking about like where they see their field, like their section, going in, 5 or 10 years. Like Mike Boyle's going to be talking like, as much as Mike hates the term functional training 2021, which I thought was awesome. He's like, it's a movie. Like I go see that. So that's going to be cool. If you're going to be out there, let me know. Definitely have to hang out. It's at the beautiful Arizona, something resort, which is where we filmed, Functional Strength Coach 4, which is an amazing place. Can't wait to go. It has water slides. Can't wait. So that's that. And also, people have been asking, where do we get the music for the show? The music is from freemusicarchive.org. And the artists that I tend to have on here are Trash 80, Tom Walks On, and Anamanaguchi, which I hope I pronounced correctly, and I believe I do. So that's that. So we're going to take a quick break. But before we do, I'm going to ask you, Lee, what's up? What have you been doing for the last 3 months on LeePeel.com and on your general stuff?
Wow. I've been doing a lot of the writing, still working on finishing up the metabolic repair release. And it's actually coming along very well, which I was in a block for a little bit. Block has risen, and it's coming along really good. So that I'm really hoping it's going to be by the new year. That's I'm like crossing my fingers that it's going to be done for that. But after I write it, it has to get edited, and I don't know how long it's going to take. So that, and then I'm doing a challenge. It's called the Do It Right Challenge, and basically focusing on how to achieve a higher level of perfection in certain areas that you focus on, be it muscle activation, core activation, or just kind of mindset, stuff like that for the members. Usually I do some sort of challenge every for 12 weeks or 8 weeks or something like that. So doing that, prizes are given out weekly, videos, audios, all kinds of things are released. So doing that, and the members are loving it. Got a new cookbook coming up. It's a 200 calorie less cookbook that'll come out on the 1st of November. And other than that, kind of laying a little low, mostly during writing and trying to make that the number one focus so that it is done with. And yeah, that's about it. Quick. Good.
Hey, John, what have you been up to? Actually, never mind. We got to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
That was wrong.
He doesn't do anything. He doesn't blog. Come on, let's be real.
I'm redoing
because
the website.
That's what makes you important.
All right. He's redoing the website, jfastbiceps.org/biceps.
Really?
Yeah, I am.
We're still recording.
Cool. I'm going to start blogging again.
Hey, awesome.
Awesome. Yeah.
Put down the PlayStation controller and do something. We'll be right back.
Thank you so much.
All right, we're here for the discussion section where we're going to be talking about a bunch of different subjects. The first thing I did want to bring up that I forgot to kind of mention a little bit before is that an anecdote that Ally McKee brought up when we got into this whole discussion about, it was a discussion about genes and how genes never fit like people that actually lift. Yeah. It, for men and women, like I was talking with one of the U.S. women's hockey players, and she's like, yeah, no, it's hell trying to find genes because, you know, we actually lift. We have muscle. And I'm like, same thing. I go to whatever, the J. Crew or the Gap, wherever you want to buy your jeans, and I can't find, like, it's super loose in the waist, wicked tight right. in the quad area. And then you end up like having to wear a belt and like fold over the jeans. It's like, why are they still making jeans for the severely, skinny people, for like the dudes that listen to Blink 182 all day. And, which I listen to Blink 182, great new CD, by the way. And the obese population, like I feel like there's two sections. You got to be either obese or like have no muscle mass. There is an opening for people that want to, an opening for people to make your genes for athletic people, people that exercise. I mean, there is a pretty good population that would fit into, even if you don't have a store, just or even if it was like an athletic version of the jeans that you wear, because. Like, I want to be able to sit down with keys and, like, a cell phone in my pocket and not feel like I'm getting stabbed in the leg, you know?
That's going to be tough.
That's just how I feel.
I just got a couple jeans from J. Crew, and it's got to be the wide, straight leg. It's the only thing you can do. Mm. But you can even get – the one thing that I've noticed, like, if you get jeans that are extra long and then have them hemmed, sometimes that works.
Yeah,
it'll
be
a little bit wider, you know what I mean? But it's tough.
Yeah, the name of the game is Taylor.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, that is the name of the game. But if you're not, then you've got to know your jean brands. Like, for example, like, if you lift and you're a guy, no True Religion, no Diesel.
Right.
None of those, usually, like, Rockin' Republic and all those kind of jeans. Like, they usually are going to run way too small. Like, you will have
the designer jeans?
Yeah, designer jeans are.
But you know, and you're usually not going to get much out of those. I think buckle usually runs a little bit larger in the quads and the crotch at the same area. It's true. I mean, certain jeans run different ways.
Okay, Kevin doesn't need that. Just the thighs.
Sure, that's true. Aside from that, Gap usually I think has. I know that a lot of guys that I know they find the Gap jeans that fit a little bit better for them. But yeah. Women, you're almost always screwed, especially if you start to work on your quads and your glutes and you build up any sort of like distinction in that zone. You're just gonna have to.
At least you guys have the. You guys have those stretchy jeans though. At least.
Don't. Well,
yeah, that's but, what, you know, has been brought up to me when I've talked about yeah, this. Get stretchy jeans now.
You can get stretchy jeans, but at the same time, you still have jeans.
Yeah, but see, that's one of the jeans that I got at J. Crew were like these like soft like butter jeans. I don't know what the hell material, like they were woven from like angel hair or something, but they're so comfortable. They're like my go-to flight jeans now. That's what I wear on a plane. It's like wearing sweatpants. It's crazy.
Cool. Yeah. One other thing I wanted to bring up, and we got to talking a little bit about training, and again, an anecdote that I originally wanted to bring up was, you know, training like you need to, like in preparation for, like just in case, like if you were going to, you know, one of the things I've talked to people about is like, you know, training in case you have to run away from something, or you know, having the ability to perform if needed. Be it like no, like the joke is like, oh, you know, there's a zombie apocalypse or something like that.
Oh, okay, because I wasn't sure where you're going with this.
zombie apocalypse ain't no joke.
No, we're not talking about relations, but the you know, the I mean, made a good point. Like there definitely is like, you know, a reason to, you know, depending on your goals, like get in some conditioning and stuff like that. And I've actually started finding myself like falling back into liking the Airdyne bike and like, you know, getting like 2 10-mile, you know, bike rides in, you know, once every week. And I do feel like, you know, a little bit better when it comes to actually lifting. I tend to have a little bit more in the tank. Especially like my training has been crap the last couple of months with like all the work. So, just getting back into things now, it feels pretty good. So I don't know, maybe that will register with some people.
Well, the pendulum has swung so dramatically toward shortest workout possible. Try to maximize your conditioning.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, well, you know, there is such a degree of conditioning that has to last more than 60 seconds.
Exactly.
Yeah. It does exist. And it has purposes. So,
and believe it or not, I didn't lose all my muscle mass doing any steady state stuff. That was nuts.
Amazing.
Oh, that's crazy.
So surprised.
Still got huge biceps. It's awesome.
Well, that's what it's really all about, isn't it?
No, I just, and you know, biceps, calves, and glutes. That's all I do. I just do curls. I do barbell hip lifts. And I do Tony Gentilcore extreme calf raises. Inside joke.
Yes, YouTube. Sir.
All right.
Yes, sir.
So the first topic suggestion that we got for the show was, you know, how to maximize recovery between workouts. We got a question from someone who's saying like, you know, I'm still kind of sore going into my next workout. It's, you know, doing three lifts a week. I'm still sore going into my workouts. Still kind of tired. I don't feel like I'm recovering fully. So I thought this was a good topic that we could kind of bounce around. You know, how do you maximize your recovery? And I want to throw it to Lee first because I still think that I still can't believe when I hear people who talk about, you know, not needing to really hit on post-workout nutrition. That, you know, people's like, oh, no, it doesn't matter. You just eat something. You'll be good. It doesn't matter. Are they right or does – you know, post-workout nutrition, like how big of a part does that play in recovery?
Well, it's more in the window that I think brings up a lot of split between people. Sorry if my talking is getting kind of muddled. If it gets too bad, just interrupt me. I think more than anything, it's mostly at the window that people have an argument about because there's been all this controversy and conversation about oh, you should allow no time at all. It should be in the second the barbell hits the floor, drink something, or even do it like while you're training. And ultimately, I think the recovery with nutrition, you have many factors, so you have multifaceted of that. You have the protein, macronutrient aspect, carbohydrates, things like that, and how it contributes to rebuilding the muscle or providing energy and uptake of nutrients, things like that. And then you also have generalized minerals and vitamins and things. Do you or do you not try and take antioxidants? Do you want the post-inflammation? Do you not? That's where kind of people start to have a lot of like argument and conversation about that. So I think that that's where some people go, dude, just eat something. You'll be fine. You know, it doesn't really matter when you eat it. You just eat it. And there's a degree of truth to that if you look at amino acid uptake and how long they've been in your system pre or post-workout. I think the ultimate problem comes in, or where people get confused, is everyone's on a different diet. Everyone's doing paleo, or they're doing IFing, or they're doing multiple meals, you know, 5 to 6 a day. You know, are you on PN, or are you doing Eat Study Eat, or are you, you know, taking part in who knows, South Beach? It just depends on if you're general population or if you're tied into this kind of network. So everyone's doing kind of a different program. And within those programs, there's different specifications. And sometimes those specifications are legitimate and sometimes they're not. And for example, if all you've had pre-workout is a branched chain amino acid, then it's pretty important to get in a kind of more specific nutrient intake post-workout versus if you're someone that eats a lot of multiple meals throughout the day, balanced nutrition, you know, you may or may not even be in a deficit. If you're not in a deficit at all, the argument becomes even more moot because pretty good the chances are that you have a pretty good amount of nutrients circulating already pre-workout. You're probably taking care of post-workout, and the meal's going to be coming sometime soon. So you're kind of good to go there. If you're in a surplus, it gets even more sillier. So I think that it's the timing is the issue. If we kind of move that aside or leave the timing aside and what it is that you're doing, the basic take-home point, and I think what anyone can do in a post-workout training situation or in this instance for recovery, is just to make sure that you're getting a high quality of nutrients within your post-workout window. Optimally, I do think research, when you look at it, you are looking in the 1 to 2, 1 to 3 hour zone. Depending upon what you've had before then is where the argument comes, yes. But let's just say we'll pick a person, individual maybe has had a little bit of nutrition prior to training, maybe not a ton, maybe they're in a caloric deficit, and they want to make sure that they're taking care of themselves, they're recovering well post-training, then 1 to 3 hours is definitely a solid window that you want to eat around. The sooner is the better. It's not bad, but it's not like if you wait 3 hours that you're just going to die and turn into a, you know, catabolic mess either, to where all your muscle is completely eaten away and there's going to be nothing left of you. So, you know, I think sooner the better is a good notion to live by, but I think where people start to really get into the details, it gets fuzzy. The balance of that is protein, is carbs, you know, even a little bit of fat. You do want these things. You want glucose, you want protein, even, you know, a little bit of fructose isn't necessarily a bad thing to throw in there either, depending. And the type of whey or protein, sorry, intake that you can get can be debated, you know, whether it's just whey or whey and casein and things like that. But getting some sort of amount of food, be it liquid or solid, within an hour, and making sure that it's balanced of macros might sound boring, might sound kind of simple, but really is ultimately your safe bet. Above that becomes optimizing and more talking about what kind of diet system you're doing and what the rotation and programs and plans are. And you know, that's just for the individual to take upon. And I think aside from that, if you look from like a supplemental standpoint, making sure that you get your vitamins in, making sure that you're getting your general multis, your general calcium, maybe in working with your timing of how you get your vitamin D and calcium. You know, we can only uptake so much at certain amounts of times. And if you want to focus on optimization, you can do slow release calcium, or you can time it throughout the day. Same with vitamin D and things like that. And if you're having a hard time with your joints, your pain, if you're someone that's in a deficit, or you're more prone to problems with muscle aches or leg cramps or things like that, maybe for you in a deficit, you start to deplete a magnesium a lot faster. So Epsom salt baths are good. In deficits and sometimes with the mixing of vitamins and uptake, magnesium just doesn't do that well via the supplements. Don't really know why. I've looked at it a lot in research, and just sometimes the uptake, it just varies for certain individuals, especially women. So if you're having a lot of leg cramp pains, which, you know, and a lot of soreness, which can lead to a lot of recovery issues for a lot of people, because then they're really sore, they don't sleep really well, or they don't do their stretching because their legs hurt or what have you, or they don't do their foam rolling, just simply taking a magnesium bath before you go into your foam roll work or your home stretch work or whatever it is you're going to do in active recovery, which hopefully John will, you know, give his spitting on, will really help you take into that situation a little bit better and push it a little bit further and not feel so much in pain or so exhausted. So I hope I hit on some aspects there, but that's kind of a brief little look at it through my eyes from a nutritional supplemental standpoint. I think that's a basic covering.
Yeah, I mean, it just goes to show that it's a big can of worms.
It is a huge, I mean, it's asking
its specificity
a
becomes, you
exactly
know,
like it gets so crazy, but I do think that that's a good general guideline. And I think that the really kind of stable stuff follows. Take your multivitamin, make sure that you're getting good nutrients with your meals. If you want to argue, you know, this kind of glycemic intake or this type of protein intake, yeah, we could go there with a specific question. But when you're talking basic recovery, your body wants nutrients and wants repair. And pretty much, you know, if it's not a overly processed, like completely crap item, you know, it's going to provide a level of that. You know what I mean? And it's going to do what you need on a base level. You can up the ante if you're not sure of, you know, does my food have a lot of nutrient uptake? Am I getting quality ingredients? Or if you feel like that you have to get stingy sometimes with what it is you're offered, be it a college kid or your mom cooks your food or, you know, you just have to deal with whatever your wife makes you for dinner, whatever, take your vitamins. Make sure to get that extra step that isn't going to replace food, but it might give you an extra benefit. And if you're someone that's prone to issues of recovery, do the extra things like maybe Epsom salt baths, which, I mean, I live and breathe by those things. They really make me feel better. It's nothing placebo about it. So, yeah, those things can help, I think, in aspects of recovery.
John, before we head over to you, I just want to throw in again an anecdote here. It's that you know, I think when people do look at post workout nutrition, also don't be afraid to try a couple different things. You know, I've talked with Lee about this in the past. I found that, you know, sometimes if I had something like surge, like 45 minutes later, my blood sugar will crash. I will literally start shaking.
Yeah.
And it, you know, especially when you're trained, like I will usually train right before I have a client or a group. And then I find that my mind's not working and I am shaking. So, just finding like, you know, adding a little bit of fat, sometimes a little bit, more fibrous carbs into my post-workout nutrition is huge.
It isn't just chemistry, you know, bio 101, let's argument about the research studies. It's not just that about optimization of your post workout. It's compliance. It's what is going to make, you know, a fitting situation into your lifestyle. What can you prepare? What can you carry around? What does it make you feel like that you want to die or go off on somebody from a, you know, a post refeed hypoglycemic crash, you know? You have to take these kind of things into consideration and leave the kind of message board arguing and anecdotes and complication to another time. And just, that's the kind of stuff that you're like, okay, I have a good system in place. I know that post-workout I'm going to eat.
Yeah.
I know that post-workout I'm going to do my training. I'm going to eat post-workout. Now let's kind of see if I take this in or if I add this out, maybe if I give myself a little bit more carbs or, you know, maybe if I go to a whole food protein source instead of a liquid protein source, these kind of things, I feel better or I feel worse. Those kind of things can make the biggest difference and not relying on just, oh, well, so-and-so guru says to do this percentage of this kind of a gram of this kind of a drink at this time within this window. That's the only thing in tried truth that we can do. That's not the case at all. Not even close. Nor is it proven. So, you know, just looking at your avenues, like, great point, Kevin. Like, oh, great point. You know, you really should try and mix and match and try and see what works for you.
And I'm not trying to keep John from talking, but the last thing I will say is, you know, again, that like Lee said, that's one of those things that kind of bugs me is that when you see, you know, people throwing out, you know, specific equations that you should be doing. Keep in mind, a lot of people that are listening to this podcast, you guys are just like looking for fat loss. You're not looking to get into the NFL. You're not looking to maximize. I mean, you're looking to maximize your results, but at what cost? And, you know, how deep are you willing to go into the rabbit hole when it comes to this
and
stuff?
Does it maximize results anyway? And I'll be the first one to say, have I written specific estimates of what you could do in an optimizing sense? Absolutely.
Well, say for the people that want that. You know what I mean?
It's for people that want it, or it's for the research that we have at the time that we can analyze and look at, and we come up with some sort of, here's a generalization that can fit to a situation that's, you know, something that you can try and do. That doesn't mean it's gospel. It doesn't even mean it's right. It just means that it's what research kind of says at the time and where things are going. And it's not a bad idea, but there is a tried and true truth that eating food after you work out of some sort, you'll feel better. It's just kind of a tried and true thing, and it'll take care of you. What, how much, and you know, on what kind of a level, that's kind of up to you. And we have certain things we know. We know that you do want protein in. We know that you do want carbohydrates and fat, and that macros being represented is important. But even getting as specific, and I'm not saying I haven't done it, but even getting as specific as saying, oh, you want 15 grams of this and you want, you know, 30 grams of that, it's just for conversation. It's a protocol discussion. It doesn't mean if you don't do it, your fat loss results are going to be horrible. I mean, I've said it time and again that you'd be amazed at the fat loss results that women get who eat nothing but 100-calorie muffins all day long have. And I'm not saying that you should do that. But what I am saying is that fat loss results can happen regardless of optimization. The optimization is there for you to take a guide from to help your body and your body composition and your training be better. And there's more things that you can explore from that point. And I think everyone just needs to kind of realize that there is no manual, textbook, research science document or anything that says this specific gram amount or this specific macro at this point in time is going to do this thing for you. And you have to do it at this level and interval and then it'll be done. It doesn't exist. All that we talk about is just, you know, it's kind of wanking about the specifics and it's fun for us, but that doesn't mean that you can't have your results. But yeah, I try to end
wanking.
Did I say wanking?
I think you said wanking. John, what do you got?
She did.
You can talk now, John.
I think the easiest way that you can think of it is if you're trying to recover from exercise, you do the opposite of whatever it is that you're recovering from. So if
why
exercise,
why do you have to come in with something really brilliant like that and just try and just give it just one quick notion? You know, always do that. It's really aggravating. You know, continue.
I do my best. If you're under stress and activity during your workout, you want to reduce stress and activity afterwards. That's sleeping. If you're lifting heavy weight or, you know, a great amount of volume to produce hypertrophy or strength, then active recovery is the opposite of that. It's very light, lower volume activity just to get blood pumping and flowing through the muscles and through the system on your day off and time off. So if you think of it in that sense, it makes it easier to, I think, to comprehend what that actually means when they talk about recovery. If you're strengthening the muscle, if you're doing movement to increase muscle tension, then the opposite of that is like foam rolling, soft tissue work. It can be stretching. All those things aren't as solid as like the sleeping and active recovery, but in the least, it's not going to hurt. And anecdotally, it does appear to help a little bit. Stretching is controversial. They don't find a lot of evidence to support it in terms of speeding up recovery. I tend to throw it in anyway because, number one, you should be working on your muscle length and the tissue quality with foam rolling and things like that. So it's certainly not going to hurt, and you're probably going to do it anyway. So I think you might as well. And the only other two things that you can – I think that are worth investigating. You can, if you're really concerned, you can try to attempt contrast baths. That's also the most of the evidence really doesn't show a whole lot. Some studies have shown that a contrast bath does seem to speed up recovery. Other studies don't. and it just depends on who they're studying and this and that. But basically, a contrast bath is, it depends on the protocol. Most protocols are somewhere around, like, you know, 10 to 20 minutes total. Usually they're going something like 2-to-1 to maybe a 4-to-1 heat to cold ratio. So maybe it's like 30 seconds of cold followed by a minute of heat, and then repeated, you know, for 15 minutes or whatever it is. And most of the baths are done when you're actually submerged, so you're in a bath as opposed to like a shower. Practically speaking, showers are probably easier for most of us to do. So that may also skew the results of any positive gains that you could make, but it might be worth trying. I think a lot of these things too are, you know, you can look at the studies and see if there's anything worthwhile, and then you experiment yourself, because even if there's just a psychological response to it and you're not getting a physiological response, that might still be worth it. You're certainly not going to risk making it worse. So you could try it and see if it works for you. The only other thing that I would suggest looking into is something like autoregulation, where you're evaluating your ability to do the entire program as it's written that day. And you can do that through ratings of perceived exertion. So during your warm-up, during your regular warm-ups, you can actually look and see what you feel like you're exerting. So, you know, if you use a certain weight the workout before and you come back to that weight and it seems lighter, then you're probably in a good position to do the workout as it's written, or maybe even increase the weight that you're using on the bar that day, depending on what the protocol is. If it feels like it's a lot heavier, then you may want to reduce that weight, because you're may not be up to it for that day. There are also techniques where you can look at your resting heart rate. If you take a baseline of your resting heart rate, do it at the same time every day. Usually you do it when you wake up, but there are different protocols for different, you know, some people do it right before the workout, whatever. But you establish a base heart rate. If you see that your heart rate is elevated that day, then you're probably still not fully recovered, and you're seeing some heightened parasympathetic activity because you haven't recovered yet. And that could be indicative of maybe wanting to back off, maybe only doing the first most important sets and kind of backing off of the accessory work, or lowering the volume or lowering the intensity. So all those things can come into play if you're finding that you're maybe having some difficulty in recovery. You've got the one side of it which will help you to recover from the workout, and then the other side of it which will help you to go into the workout and determine where you should be that day. So that's what I would say.
That was a pretty good discussion about maximizing your recovery between workouts.
I agree.
Yeah. So let's we got a question from Mimi. This is some old school stuff that we're bringing up right now. So listen to this. Do you guys remember EC stacks back yeah, in the 2000s?
Still very used.
Back in the aughts. Man, I remember reading about this, like, I think it was on, like, bodybuilding.com, about, like, dude, where do you get that Vasopro? Because Vasopro is what everyone was using for ephedrine. Anyways, she says, I was curious about EC stack separating the real benefits from the bro science. If they can be damaging in the long run, can one build a tolerance, and how to avoid, etc.? I got curious because I thought EC stacks was only a bro sciencey bodybuilder or figure athlete cutting for a show thing. Then a powerlifter friend of mine was raving about them, and suddenly I hear tons of people using small doses of them. Color me intrigued. Anyhow, I'm totally fine if you don't get to it. Just something I was curious about. Have a lovely Sunday. You too, Mimi. So Lee, let's talk about the EC stack, where it seems for the most part everyone's dropped the aspirin. If you were, you know, looking into it way back in the day, it was an ECA stack.
Yeah, most people don't utilize the aspirin. The reason that people were utilizing the aspirin is because in research it had shown benefit for those who were largely obese, I believe, or at least claimed that there is. I don't remember exactly the reasoning that it was proper towards obese, but I remember that it had some sort of theoretical importance in that. So a lot of people dropped that because the majority of people that use EC stacks are bodybuilders or those that are already at lean levels. And they're trying to utilize them for, well, thermogenic, appetite suppressant, et cetera, like type reasoning. So I guess it's kind of a tricky question because technically EC stacks are illegal. So I think we should make it very clear, us at the FitCast do in no way support the use or buying of any illegal substances in America, correct? Yeah.
For that.
Yeah, you know, just saying that as far as my clients go or anything like that, I do not support clients that utilize illegal substances or substances that are not legal to use in the United States. And it is, however, legal in some other countries. It's Canada, I believe. It's legal in Canada. It's legal in a lot of places. And that is where most people acquire the E of the EC, which is it's ephedrine. And then caffeine, that's what it stands for, ephedrine, caffeine, and if you had the A, aspirin, ECA. And the general purpose that people use the EC stacks for are mostly to try and speed up fat loss or to help aid in fat loss in whatever way they desire it to. There is research that shows that it does work very well to help, but understand that very well is small margin of very small amount of calorie decrease or uptake. Essentially, what it really does is it helps from any sort of metabolic adaptation from taking place. It keeps your body temperature high. It keeps a lot of things that kind of slow down in the process of fat loss or that kind of have like halts or glitches in the system while you're utilizing you know, fat as fuel from your own body. It starts to put your hormones into certain kind of cycles, and in general, your body doesn't like that. EC stacks can sometimes, for some people, come in and help that from down-regulating so fast, and also that helps with compliance, because even while from a metabolic aspect, maybe you being cold or having a little bit more of a sluggish energy doesn't change you too much in the aspect of your internal energy and what's taking place. Your external energy can change a lot, be it through NEAT or how much you push yourself in a training session. You could lose a couple hundred calories a day, not even realizing it, simply from you're not giving as much in your training session or you're moving a little less in your day-to-day life from the vigorousness of you getting up and going to the bathroom to you making your dinner. All of these things affect your daily caloric burn. So EC stacks or thermogenics in general, it doesn't even have to be these in particular, are supposed to come in and save the day. And people utilize all kinds of methods. They utilize just hot rocks or whatever's popular at this point in time. I mean, they change from like week to week. And you can try so many different ones, and each have supposedly their own effects. But the reason that EC gets continually supported is because it has research behind it to back it specifically. And that's one of the reasons why it has not left. It's been around for a while, and it's probably going to stay around. The reason it became illegal to sell it was because a lot of people were complaining about death, strokes, high blood pressures, unwanted euphoric effects, and things like that. And that can happen just from the presence of a lot of other things in drugs that it could be mixed with, but they kind of pinpointed that it was ephedrine that did this. It was the ephedrine that they did not like, and so they kind of booted it and kicked it out. So can it show benefits? People have seen that it has benefits with appetite suppression. Again, you have more energies for your workout, or you can not be as cold throughout the day. You have more general focus. And it's a pretty aggressive, mostly it's for appetite suppressant, though. It's a pretty aggressive appetite suppressant. Some people get downright nauseous or nauseated. They cannot eat at all. Or if they do eat, almost feel an urge to get physically sick. And so people love that, because if you can't eat, you're going to lose the fat, so to speak. So that's why people utilized it. There are negative side effects from it as well. Obviously, antsiness, high blood pressure. You can say that the life-threatening illness could come into play, as it can with a lot of things in any situation, if you use it wrong or you overdo it in a bad manner. So I'm not going to necessarily go on record and say that I support it. Yay, go do it, per se. But it is something that people utilize. So in a reporting sense, yeah, people utilize it, and that's kind of the benefits and the cons of utilizing it. And is it mythical in its the results that people have had? No, not really. Most people, you know, just get caffeine pills and ephedrine from online through Canada or something like that, and they do it through that. And there's a lot of things like, yeah, so.
I just did some on-the-spot research, and going to your favorite online retailer in the United States, you can pick up ephedrine right now.
Can you? I thought it was something you could not buy here. Is it actual ephedrine though, or is it like?
It's ephedrine HCL. It's the Vasopro that everyone used to talk about.
And you can buy it here through an American market.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm not gonna lie. This isn't my field of expertise. I'm not like an.
They banned it a couple years ago. I remember them talking about it. I thought the company completely went out of business, but I guess someone still got some.
Well, I know that there are certain subsects of the drug, meaning that you can ban one, but there's another that's like exactly the same that is not banned.
Great.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if that's more of what it is.
It's like how drug companies change, like, you know, one thing in the, you know, the molecule of their drug and makes it a little bit less effective. But
it's a controlled substance.
Yeah.
I mean, are you sure that you're not looking at a site in which that it's a controlled substance site?
I'm looking at Amazon.com.
I don't know. It's not my area of expertise as far as how to get it.
Don't use it. You're going to feel like garbage. And the health risk is just not.
To my last understanding is that you could not buy it, or you could not buy it or it be sold to without a prescription.
Might be the leftovers.
That was my last of my knowledge, but I'm not going to say it's my area of expertise.
Eat less, move more. That's all you need to do.
All right. Looking at this, it looks like it's just caffeine. There's a bunch of other crap in it.
Are they saying that it's ephedrine, but it's not?
No, it's just under the Vasopro name, which used to be because it used to be a like bronchiolator. It used to be, you know, if you have like a cold or something like that. Now it's.
It's kind of tricky because like you can get like the tea or the herb that is ephedrine, and that is sold, but it is not the same thing.
Weird.
So I'm thinking, like, I'm not trying to like fight with you about it, but I'm really thinking that what you're seeing is some sort of like form of it, but it is not actually.
You're correct. No, you're correct. Looking at it, you're correct. And we're always fighting. So, all right, let's go. How are we doing for time? We're doing pretty good for time. We can all hit on this, but I thought this was a good topic that we got. What's that?
What?
I've been approached to train a local amateur rugby league team in the off season. It will be my first time doing anything like that. Any suggestions on how to structure off-season periodization? Also, they have limited equipment and haven't seemed to do any sort of strength program in the past. So I thought this was a good question. I got it from a Facebook message. And one thing I will say, did not know rugby was so huge around the world. Like my friend, I went to go visit him in Orlando, and they were getting ready to wake up at 2 in the morning or like 3 in the morning to watch rugby on pay-per-view for $40.
Like, yeah, dude, it's the
couldn't believe it.
What do you call it? The World Cup.
Yeah, no, but it's unbelievable. But anyways, a couple quick things to hit on. In terms of setting up the off-season program, in terms of periodization, obviously it all depends on how much time they have in that off-season and if they are going to be practicing in that off-season. I kind of like to go with one good resource that you might want to check out is Eric Cressy's off-season training manual, which, you know, is pretty complete. That came out a couple of years ago. And one of the great things, things that he said in that is like you got to look at your athlete like a glass, you know, like a glass that you're going to fill with water or whatever. So, there's only so much that you can fill up in that glass, and you got to make sure, you know, you have enough room for what you need to get done. So, look at it like if they are going to have practice, you know, that's going to take up part of that glass. So you're only going to have so much more that you're going to be able to get out of them when it comes to jumping into to the weight room and working on speed and performance. So, again, it's hard to discuss into too much detail before knowing how much time you're going to have with them for that off season. So I'm going to come back to that in a second. You know, we can kind of shoot around, go around with this. But if you have limited equipment, really not that big of a deal. As long as you have some dumbbells, some bars, and some plates, you can pretty much get everything done that you need to get done, and of course, benches. You know, having a squat rack will also be beneficial, not necessary, especially when it comes to walking lunges, rear fit elevated split squats, single-legged deadlifts, single-legged squats, that whole array of single-leg exercises, and of course, goblet squats and things like that that you can do with dumbbells and barbells. Again, if you have a rack, even better. You can you know, play around with that a little bit more, especially when you have an amateur rugby league team. You know, you're probably going to get a wide range of strength levels too. So, might even starting with some body weight stuff will probably be pretty good for them. And you can mix in more loaded stuff as you continue to go. When you know, talking about progressions and regressions with your athletes, just make sure that they're performing these exercises correctly. As you know, you're going to be coaching them. Make sure you kind of have a setup of what you're going to do when they become so proficient at an exercise and you cannot load it anymore because you don't have the weight. Make sure you have a progression that you can use to, you know, make sure that they continue to gain strength. So if you're looking at a you know, a goblet squat, you can transition them to a, or I should say, let's go with like a split squat. You can go from a split squat to a reverse lunge, to a walking lunge, to a rear foot elevated split squat. You know, you have a couple of things to play with there, so you can continue to progressively make the exercise more difficult as long as they are proficient in performing said exercise. So the limited equipment shouldn't be a big deal. When it comes to the upper body stuff, again, you know, you're going to have plenty of stuff with body weight and with the dumbbells, bars, and benches. When it comes to the speed and performance stuff, you know, you don't necessarily want to go right into making your own boxes unless you know someone who's like a carpenter or is very well with, you know, creating boxes for plyometrics or for box squats. The speed work and the ballistics are the like the med ball work that you're going to do with them. Again, that's going to be dependent on the equipment that you have. If you have ladders, obviously, you know, there's plenty of ladder drills that you can throw at them. If you have a decent amount of space or a turf, or you can take them out into a field, you can do plenty of your active warm-up speed, you know, your shuttle run, stuff like that out there. If you can get access to a wall and some med balls, that's when you can do your ballistics and your med ball work, where you can get in your shot puts, your chest pads, your hip tosses, overhead slams, all that stuff. So you really don't need a ton of equipment. I you know, especially if you look at what we do at Boyles, we don't use a ton of equipment. We have like a lot of a little, like we have lots of dumbbells. We have lots of cages or racks to use, and we have a bunch of platforms. You don't even need platforms to do your Olympic lifts. So really all you need is space, and you know you need proper equipment, but you don't need anything fancy. You can do a pull-up with an iron gym in a doorway if you need to. You know, don't go nuts, don't look at like the fancy stuff. If you go to like an athlete's performance, they have tons of great, you know, stuff to use. And that's, you know, it's for professional athletes. They have tons of money coming in there. You know, it's a totally different circumstance. You don't need to have all these bells and whistles. You can go nuts with like a TRX. Like, that's going nuts if you really want to. Building a sled, you can build a sled if you want. There's lots of tutorials on how to build a sled out there. Or depending on where you are, you can get a sled or a prowler over there, and you really only need one or two for a team. You know, depending on how big the team is, because you can always have people doing complexes or circuits and stuff like that. How am I doing?
Oh, you're doing great.
I'm losing my voice. So, you know what, John? You play rugby, right?
I trained rugby.
You trained rugby? That's right. Down at down at that play at Rutgers.
Yeah.
So maybe we should have given you this question, but I probably answered it better than you would have anyways.
Right.
So, John, what did I miss out on? I'm talking about overall athletic performance. Yeah. Like, these are the things that you're going to want to do and what you're going to do.
I think the basic is true of anyone, whether they're an athlete or just, you know, a regular person. You evaluate, decide, and prescribe. That's what you do. You take a look at your athlete, you decide what their needs are, and you prescribe to those needs. In the off season, they're going to come in probably pretty banged up. They've taken, you know, the season will be a lot of volume and a lot of activity. So you want to give them a downtime, a recovery period, whatever is appropriate, depending on the length of the season and the intensity of it. And that can be as a team or it can be individual depending. And then what you're looking for is basically what their greatest needs are. And you want to work in such a way to make them more fit for the next season and to take care of any asymmetries that may have cropped up during the season that are very likely to occur and any deficits in their strength that may have cropped up. If they're not already lifting regularly, then chances are your off-season program is going to be pretty simple. It's just going to be to improve strength and then, you know, strength into power right before the season begins. So you can go higher volume, you know, building up to a higher volume during the off-season, building up to greater strength, and then using that strength to move into power strength type of stuff. With a rugger, these guys are powerful, but they also have to move fast and they also have to have a great deal of endurance. So you're kind of running the gambit with what you need to produce in the qualities. So take a look at the position, take a look at the individual and decide what they need to do to be the best, you know, athlete, but the best player at their position at that point. And that's really all you do. It doesn't have to be more complicated than that. Honestly, I inherited a couple rugby teams that were not very – they were in game shape, but they weren't good athletes. And I just made them really strong. And it just did wonders for their game. They already had the skill sets. They just needed to be able to apply it more athletically. And that's basically what I used to do with them. And it can oftentimes be as simple as that.
You know what? I think we're coming in at about an hour and 15 minutes. It's a great place. Actually, even more than that because we recorded before the discussion stuff. So how you guys doing? Did that whet your appetite out there? Did that whet your thick-ass appetite or your thirst?
Kevin, stop hitting on the listeners.
He's got the sexy voice thing going. Mm. He's got the sexy I've been sick voice and he's trying to
I couldn't even talk on Friday night.
Yeah.
It was terrible. All right, so thanks everyone for listening. What I would love for you to do, and we're gonna try this. We tried it before and no one sent anything in. So I'm gonna ask for some listener feedback from this show. Your thoughts on the show, your thoughts on something we talked about during the show, something that you want us to follow up on about this show. And then we're going to bring those up next week. We're going to try this. So it's got to be a two-way street here. We need some participation from the crowd. So what you can do is you can send your comments or your feedback to questions@theficass.com, or you can send them to, you know, me through Facebook or on Twitter, you know, Twitter or Facebook /Kevin Larrabee. I'm on both of those. Send them there and I'll throw them into the outline. And, if you don't want me to, I won't use your name. Just say, don't use my name. Like, if that's something you're worried about. But to be honest,
up a fun name.
Yeah. Like Johnny Dynamite. That's a cool name. Mm. Never mind. So that's it. Thanks everyone for listening. We got about a 20-minute off topic where we talk about a bunch of things, from Steve Jobs to the evolution of the Fast and Furious franchise to some awesome headphones, NBA 2K12, and
politics, dude.
Yeah, we actually kind of sort of talked about politics. So don't worry, it's all good. We'll see you next week. Until next time. Maybe I should write something down. See you next time.
Peace out, Cub Scout.
So smooth. Never would have thought you didn't have a transition there.
That's what she said. Believe it or not, we're here for an episode of the FitCast. We're recording some off-topic discussion. It's been about 2 months since we put out an episode. Almost 3 months since we've had the whole cast together. John and I recorded something like 1 or 2 weeks ago, but I never posted it.
Yeah. Did it suck or what happened?
I don't know. I'm going to put it into this episode. It just, I don't know. It doesn't feel right, you know. Didn't feel like it was worth my time editing it. I've been really, really busy, so I'm hedging my bets. I'm still trying to fit in some kind of fun time. But we got some things to talk about. Some things have been happening. The first thing, let's hit on some news. I mean, we all kind of have Apple stuff. So Steve Jobs died a week ago, so or a week and a half ago, almost 2 weeks ago now. Mm-hmm. And I literally was on my way to Best Buy when I was like scanning my Android phone. I was on my way to Best Buy to buy an iPod because I was heading to Orlando and I didn't have an iPod. I'm like, I need something so I can listen to music. And then like I read like on my phone that he died. I'm like, holy crap, that's nuts. But
See, isn't that ironic? We both read about Steve Jobs dying on non-Apple products.
Well, yeah, but I was on my way to buy an Apple product, and I just days before I spent $2,000 on a new MacBook Pro.
Yeah, that's true.
Thank you, Best Buy card, and it's just a sad story. Obviously, there's not too much more that we can say about it, but great mind has died, and a great mind and kind of a dick, depending on how you look at it. So
yeah.
Now that we're 2 weeks into it, people are just posting up stories about how terrible the conditions are at Foxconn in China. I'm like, yeah, but it was always like that. I mean, it's
nothing really changed there.
And there's only so many places you can get these devices made. And if you want your iPad for $500 instead of like $900, it wouldn't be that big of a difference. But it's just it is what it is. And until the Chinese government wants to do something about it, which they probably won't. It's just the way it is. One thing I
was go Occupy Wall Street. Go.
Yeah, we're not talking about that.
Yeah.
Oh, we're not talking about Occupy Wall Street.
We don't talk about politics. And I, you know what? I will say something is that, the people that like, I mean, Facebook is great and all, but if you have a job that you give a crap about, or like if you feel like ever trying to sell me something or want me to read what you write, don't talk about politics on Facebook. You're not a political strategist. You don't work for CNN. And when you start posting stuff that, you're basically going to piss off 50% of the people that you're talking to. I mean, if you look at whatever, the 2000 election, it literally came down to the wire where it was like 50-50 Democrat or Republican. So
It is pretty amazing, though, when you have as many friends as we have. And I don't mean to make a weird narcissistic statement by that. Mm-hmm. But when you have as many friends as we have, and we're not like close to them personally. It's not like every friend that I'm friend with on Facebook I know, like in life or what have you. And then you see the political spectrum in your feed.
Yeah.
It's quite fascinating. It really is.
I mean, you can kind of see. I just think, you know, I'm all for debate, and I think debate is great. And, you know, the one thing, you can say what you want about whatever anyone is doing, but they totally do have the right to do that. And that's one of the great things about America is that it's a free country, and you can say whatever the hell you want. If I wanted to say, you know, something crazy like, you know, Fast and Furious is a bad movie, like, I would never say something like that, but I have the right to do that. I still think that, you know, you say what you want, but just don't put hatred behind it. I mean, there's something between, you know, free speech, and then there's also, you know, hate. And when you put like hate behind something you're going to say, I block people. I keep bouncing between like 1500 friends because I keep like blocking people because I don't want to hear it. And that's not something that, you know, if you're going to be hateful towards anyone, whether it's a Democrat or a Republican or someone who's like believes in something that you don't believe in, I think that's a terrible thing to do. That just makes you pretty much a bad person. Shouldn't be hateful, or a person that I don't want to be associated with.
It was when we were, because I was a political science major undergrad, mm-hmm. and you know, you kind of fell into either, you know, one of two categories, and you're not talking about political alliance, although, you know, the majority of undergrads in college are usually some form of liberal, but you fell into one of two camps as a poli-sci major. You were either the kid that wore a bow tie to class and was running for local election in their town, and they were, you know, I mean, really involved in politics. And then you had guys like me and my friends that we were like, well, it's a bunch of horse crap here and a bunch of horse crap there, and whatever, you know, like it wasn't as real to us in that sense. Like we didn't get as politicized as some of the other kids did that were studying in the same major. But and that's kind of how I feel, even like what you said, Kev, because I agree completely. Like opinions are opinions. We would have these great, you know, debates and discussions as undergrads, and we'd all discuss things and we'd have different opinions. But we all knew that we weren't changing anyone's opinion. I mean, it's not going to happen. If anyone changes an opinion, especially a political opinion, it happens typically over many years. There's not usually one event. Sometimes it is. Like someone says, you know what, I got sick of, you know, my party's stance on this particular issue. But a lot of times people just kind of seem to ebb and flow depending on what their personal situation is. And it's like, it's, I don't know. I don't find it, I agree with you, I don't find it as much of a reason to outwardly state my opinions. I don't think it's too difficult to figure them out, but it, you know, who am I convincing? I'd rather that there's activity, political activity, regardless of what side you're on, than just apathy. So,
well, I think, you know, one thing that is kind of interesting is you do see you know, people commenting not only on social networks, but also on the news. And, you know, again, it's like, you know, you just, I think you have to give people your opinion, whether it be, you know, whether I think it's right or wrong, but just don't, you know, say these people are idiots. They, you know, you can't lump everyone into one category, especially when you have like 20,000 people doing something. Sure, there's going to be a lot of people that, you know, you could just say, oh, they're just lazy. You know, they aren't educated and it's their fault. But on the other side of things, you know, there's people that are educated. You know, they have a college degree, and they might even have a job, but they just, you know, it's something that they believe in. And I think that's great. I mean, to be honest, the last couple of years, I feel like there hasn't been a lot that people have gotten behind, whether it be good or bad. I mean, when 9/11 happened, we all became extremely patriotic again, and everyone joined together. And now it's another group of, you know, young, old, you know, men and women, you know, people of different beliefs and pretty much one-sided in terms of, you know, who they're what political leaders they lean right. towards. But I think it's good that people are being like voicing their opinion. I think we should,
right.
you know, obviously let them do that. Otherwise, we are not America anymore. We become a country where, you know, you can't say right. what you want to say, which wouldn't be as fun.
If no one shows up that day, then democracy ceases to exist. That's the basic tenet of democracy. So, you know, the political participation, you're exactly right. It's a good thing because without that participation, you can't – it is impossible to have an apathetic society and a working, functioning democracy. It can't happen by definition. So, you know, an informed populace is important. That's why freedom of press is vital to democracy, and a participating population is also vital to democracy. Because again, if nobody votes, there's no democracy. If nobody cares, there's no democracy. So, anything like this, these are good things. You know, there can be negatives that come out of them. Things should be peaceful. Things should be, you know, according to societal rules about these sorts of things. But to everything that I can, you know, generally speaking, it has been the laws that have been broken have been civil laws, like they're blocking the streets, you know. So,
which I don't think people should do. You shouldn't impede other people from living their lives.
No,
you shouldn't be blocking traffic or do anything like that. But well, I apologize. We probably shouldn't even brought this up, and you know, all together. But Lee, I want you to get your.
You know, but I think that this is what it is. I think what we're discussing is something different.
Well, the things we're discussing are completely biased, unbiased of any sort of partisanship. It's not as if that we're saying anything one way or another. I think those are pretty evident truths that run through whether you're a Democrat or a Republican.
No,
or anything.
No, I totally agree. Is there anything else you guys want to say before we move on? I don't want to, you know, leave anyone out. And also make sure we're using that Google chat just in case. I guess not. Well, I want to quickly say that, like I said, I got an iPod, NBA 2K12 on iPod and iPad is nuts. Buy it right now. It's $5. It's like unbelievable. That's all I want to say.
I pre-ordered Batman.
Dude, Batman's getting sick reviews, but I don't own a PlayStation. I don't own an Xbox or a PC anymore. So I'm kind of SOL until Christmas, until Santa comes.
And I'm pre-ordering Assassin's Creed.
It's going to be dope.
Dude, it looks, I mean, the screenshots of both of those games.
I haven't looked at anything about those games. So.
No, you need to because
you will. No, I don't want to. I wouldn't be surprised.
You'll lose your mind. It's sick. It's so sick.
And I harassed Lee a couple of months ago about headphones quite a bit.
What did you end up getting?
I have Audio Technica AT150s.
Oh.
Those are awesome. But I went back to the Sony MDR7506s, which is like kind of the you know, the golden standard for monitoring whether you're editing video or audio. And the only reason, just because they're smaller, it's more compact. Like I, the Audio Technica's cord is incredibly long. The headphones are huge. So I noticed when I was flying to Orlando that it was a pain in the ass to get the headphones out of my bag. The Sony's are just a lot smaller. It has enough bass and enough noise canceling in them to survive. So I went back to those and I'm actually like obsessed with them. They're so much lighter and it's just,
those are closed ear, right?
Correct.
Yes.
I mean, I love them. They're like, if you watch like a director or something like that, you'll always see them wearing these or like someone in radio. But, it's just the right in between, especially for podcasting, because I can still hear myself talk now. I can hear myself through the headphones and, I should say through the outside of the headphones, and it still gives me great sound, and it's a nice coiled cord. So if you guys are looking for headphones and you want something that's like almost somewhat professional, those are the MDR7506, and they're like $80 on Amazon. They're pretty cheap. They're pretty reasonable, and they're the same headphones that Sony has made for the last like 18 years. And they are pretty good.
More in a pair of Sonys right now.
Sony does make pretty good stuff.
Yeah. And they're good stuff. So. Yeah.
They owned electronics in the 80s and 90s. Like, if you didn't own a Sony, you owned, at least you needed Sony guts. You know, you had to have Sony guts in it. It's good. Sony, it's got Sony guts. It's good.
It's Sony guts. Go. It's Sony guts.
No, disco, good.
Good. Disco, good.
What? How much you pay for this? No, we're just kidding. In a bad territory. It's a Saturday.
No refund. What's a refund? No refund.
No. You said it had Sony guts in it, and it's not. It's Iowa. Who buys Iowa? Come on. So that's all I got for off-topic stuff, unless you want to talk about the evolution of the Fast and Furious series and why Justin Lin is pretty much the Steven Spielberg of the action movie.
Oh, that's a big statement.
He is our generation's Steven Spielberg. And I just watched yesterday, I watched Fast and the Furious, the first movie, and I was like, holy crap, this is pretty friggin' boring. And
I don't think I'd say it was boring.
Well, watching it's so dated. They have Nokia cell phones. They are listening to some of the worst music. Like, it was all like Ja Rule. Like, Ja Rule, guys, come on.
I'll give you that.
And like, Ja Rule has like three songs in it. And one of the songs is Too Fast, Too Furious. So when they actually got the name of Too Fast, Too Furious from a effing Ja Rule song, it's like, what are you guys doing?
Second one was just absolute. It's horrendous.
Oh, no, it doesn't exist.
I can't even watch the second one.
I've watched it once and I've never watched it again. But then I went right into Fast and Furious. It's 100 times better. Justin Lin just does such a great job with the driving effects and the sense of speed, and you're fun. Like, you smile when you watch. Like, I smile when I'm watching those races, even though I've seen them a couple times. Like, oh my God, this is badass. They're just making these crazy turns, and you know, there's cars flipping over and they're crashing into each other. And how did he just beat that guy? And it's so much better. And I'm so excited. I kind of talked about this with John, but they just announced Fast and Furious 6 and 7. They're shooting them back to back later this year.
Is it really going to have Statham in it?
And it's
just a rumor.
Jason Statham is rumored to be in both of the movies. The Rock is back. And he's already signed on. Like, The Rock has been talking about it on Twitter and stuff. They're shooting it later this year. So literally in December, 2 months, once he's done with G.I. Joe, he's heading right into Fast and the Furious 6, which I guess they're just going to call Fast 6 and Fast 7. So, and everyone's back. I'm so happy. Like, that. I've never been more excited for a movie, and if you can believe it, they keep making more money one after the other. They keep getting better and better, and I'm just so happy that Justin Lin is back for another round, and that he's not doing a crappy Terminator movie, because the Terminator series just doesn't need to come back. Just let it be. Although, Arnold, did you guys see the pictures of Arnold in Expendables 2?
No.
He looks great. He looks really good. I will see. Lee, why don't you talk about what you've been up to? I'm going to send you guys these pictures for your reaction real quick.
Well, talk about what I've been up to.
You don't have to talk about. Yeah, I mean, talk about good stuff.
Talk about. He put me on the spot, John.
Yeah, he does that a lot. I know.
What have I been up to? Well, John, what have you been up to? You're the one that's like with the, you know, super boss.
Yeah, it's true.
You been anywhere this
going
week?
Going to the moon next week?
Oh my
week,
God, you weren't even on that episode when I made
the announcement. No, I missed the coming out episode.
Yeah, you did.
I really did. I'm really sad about that. I didn't get to hear it. I didn't get to see what went down.
Yeah, I was a little bummed. We are going on a trip in like 2.5 weeks or something. Otherwise, we've just been sitting in the desert on our keisters. Not much has been going on otherwise. Back to you.
Is there even like camel spotting happening?
Give me 2 minutes.
They're all over. They're like pigeons here.
Are they really?
They have like camel farms that I pass all the time, and it's just like a bunch of camels, and like it'll be like a Bedouin in the desert, like leading this like group of camels, and they're all just walking slowly. Yeah, it's pretty
I was just joking.
Those things really can jog. Yeah, those things can jog, though. They'll go, like, you know, 10 miles an hour or something.
I was booking it.
Yeah. No, like, they'll jog. They'll kind of move a little. Getting on them is freakish because they go up.
Oh, so
you're
at one now?
Yeah. Yeah. They get up, like, ass first, and you're looking straight down at the ground. Like, it's you got to hold on for dear life.
Oh, my God. I've always wanted to ride a camel.
Yeah. And then
I have
it's just
an odd obsession with riding really. This is going to sound pervy. No matter how I said it, I already started it. It's just done now. Yeah. I have a very large obsession with riding, like, large animals. Desire that's to do that.
What?
I don't know why. I see. There's nothing I can do. It's just it's out there. It said, you're twisted people. I can't say things like this to you and Kevin. Yeah.
Link is in the document.
Okay.
At the top of the document, that is, he looks pretty damn good for 64.
I rode on an elephant in Thailand.
See, I've ridden on an elephant.
Yeah.
Well, I've never ridden on a camel, but
that's a bigger. That was a lot bigger than a camel.
You left Kevin, and I said out loud that I like to ride large animals.
Oh no, I was listening.
No, whatever.
That's what she said.
He looks good. Yeah.
No, the and one thing I want to say: if you guys aren't watching Fringe, it is so good this year. It gets better and better. As I continue to watch it, and Terra Nova is
start
crap.
Harassing you about the shows that I watch that you don't.
What?
Because it's been.
What do you want me to watch? Gilmore Girls, Lee. Want me to watch Ghost Whisperer?
The whole time that you have known me, and that I have been doing this podcast, that is the kind of thing I've been.
Melrose Place 2010.
You suck.
That's gonna wrap it up for the off topic. Thanks for listening.